This is The Thirst Tank, presented by Track Brewing Company.
And it's basically taking those hops that have done all the agronomic testing, so they're good yield hops, you know, they've been tested, and some of these have been in the pipeline for 10, 15 years. I mean, hops take a very long time. You've got to be very patient in the hop world. But they've got to the point where everyone thinks they're good enough to potentially be launched commercially. And the last and the most important step, and it's a bit like your bar staff in terms of, you know, getting that influence, is getting the brewer's feedback.
Hello and welcome to The Thirst Time, the show that takes a deep dive into the careers and journeys of some of the most creative minds in the craft beer industry today. Today's guest, we have Kiralee Waldhorn. Now, this was originally just going to be me touching base with Kiralee and recording it to give a little bit more scope about the Bracht Brewing Program project, which we are part of, which is that we've been given an experimental New Zealand hop to put in an IPA, and you lucky guys are going to get to try it before anyone else in Europe and let us know what you think. We are pretty smitten with what we've been given, and it's a really exciting project to be a part of. So yeah, that was the original foundation of this interview. But doing a little bit of background on Kiralee, I realized that there was so much more to talk about than just this. So that's exactly what we did. Kiralee's actually been in the beer industry for 24 years, I think she said. So there's a whole lot of wisdom to be taken from someone that's been in the industry that long. She's also worked with Lion, who are a huge entity, especially in Australia. And sometimes as small brewers, you know, the corporate infrastructure is not something that we came with. We came with a passion to brew a product that we care about and is delicious. And the business acumen maybe is a side part. So it's always good talking to someone who's really been in that environment and then gone on to work with independents, so can understand these two worlds really well. So yeah, lots going on there. It was a great conversation. A massive thanks to Kiralee for me again springing this on. She graciously gave the time to do a full interview for the first time. So let's get to it. You are listening to Track Brewing Co. Presents The Thirst Time, and this is our interview with Kiralee Waldhorn. And we start with that all important question: what was that first beer for her?
No, there wasn't. There wasn't. Well, it was further down the track, I think. So I always enjoyed beer. I grew up with brothers. You know, I was surrounded by males, army dad. You know, not that all of that means you have to drink beer, but I was always kind of comfortable drinking beer, which a lot of females, you know, weren't back in those days. But it was actually going to the UK. So I left Australia in my early 20s. I think I was 20, and went to the UK and spent 8 years there. And I loved the beer culture. I loved the little village pubs. I loved that they all brewed their own beer. And there was such a hub of the pub and the beer was such a hub of the community, and just trying different beers was, you know, so much fun. And then, you know, I lived in London. There was a practical element to drinking beer as well. And, you know, London's got a lot of people compared to Australia. And on a busy night in a pub, a glass of wine just is, you rent the bar too often. So it's like, well, I've got to learn how to drink pints and, you know, actually sip the pint and not queue up at the bar for so long. So, I think Caffrey's was a beer that I really liked.
Wow.
When I was, this is in the 90s. Okay. Yeah. This is a while back. That was probably the one that, as an everyday, you know, a beer that you could get in any pub. That was the one that I really liked. I really liked the culture around it. the whole pint concept, the go and have a curry and a pint once the pub shut. And that was really weird for me that the pub shut at 10 o'clock. I was like, hang on, we're just getting going here. But then it continues at the Indian restaurant, doesn't it?
Okay,
That's
of course, yeah.
tradition. Pint of lager and a curry. And then I obviously came back to Australia and was really lucky to get a job working with Lion. So obviously one of the big breweries here. So there's two major breweries. Australia Lion's one of them. And just met some amazing people. And in particular, I met one person, Bill Taylor, who was the chief brewer for Lion. And he was a real storyteller. He was very passionate about beer as a category. When you work for a big corporate organization, it's very much about brands and, building those brands. Whereas Bill had this beautiful, I guess this focus on how do we build beer as a category? How do we get more people interested in beer? And how do we show them how diverse beer can be?
That's
And
so
he was just,
interesting.
he was so good at telling the stories. And again, this is the early 2000s, mid 2000s. So craft beer in Australia hadn't really taken off. It was just starting to. But he just wanted people to appreciate beer for what it was and the history of where beer came from as well. And when you've got a duopoly in a country, I think these breweries were fighting for share rather than looking to build drinkers. And when I was first working for Lion, we had beer had something, well, around 70% share of throat, which is, what you call it. It's now 30 something percent. So you didn't have to work too hard to be drinking beer. They're already drinking beer, but then other categories started to come through and started to educate, particularly the wine industry in Australia did an amazing job at educating people around flavor profiles, food pairing, just raise the sophistication levels, I guess. And it became accessible to everyone, but people felt like they knew a little bit and they were making a more informed choice. And that's what Bill was trying to do with beer. So I just sat next to him on this project for a year and just absorbed everything I could.
That's so
And
cool.
I guess the turning point, I think when I actually realized that I wanted to be a Bill Taylor in some respects was we'd finished this project and it was an educational project program for hospitality staff to try to teach them about different styles and flavors and how to look after beer. And he took the team out for dinner and he ended the dinner with porter, which is obviously a very well-known English style beer, and had it served in a champagne flute and paired to a piece of chocolate mud cake. And that was my moment. I
Wow.
thought everyone needs to know about this. Everyone needs to know how amazing this combination is and how great beer can actually work with food as well as wine. So that was probably the light bulb moment for me when, my epiphany and thought, I need to be out there telling people how great this is.
It's so funny that your moment came with a porter in a flute glass, because that's not it's not the traditional way to serve that beer.
No, not at all. It's not at all. And Bill loved that. He loved, I mean, look, I'm drinking my beer. I've got this beautiful beer from South Australia, which we can talk about later, but in a wine glass. I love wine glasses for beer. I think the more we put it into a wine glass, the more people will actually that it changes how they approach it. They
That's so interesting.
smell it, they stop, they treat it like a wine, you see people swirling it. And it's a completely different experience just by changing the glass, I think.
That is so fascinating. Yeah, it was interesting. I actually did it. It's like a little kind of corporate tasting yesterday, with a friend, and we finished with like this big imperial stout. And he was holding it, you know, like a brandy glass. And I was like, that's kind of exactly how it should be done, because it's a very strong beer. It's like very flavorsome. It's got sweetness. And it's probably like the right amount. It's like an aperitif post-meal or something. Presentation does change the way, I guess, our brains compute the liquid in the glass.
Absolutely. But it's such a shift. And I've run, so I set up my business after Lion in 2008. Mm-hmm. So what are we, about 15 years ago. And I did a lot of events, so a lot of, you know, corporate tastings, a lot of public tastings. And I would often start with a champagne flute. And back then, wheat beers or Hefeweizens, which I wish they would come back because I love them. And mm-hmm. I know they're rising, but I think they're such a great beer to get the, you know, the non-beer drinkers into beer. But yeah, Paul, I would serve that in a champagne flute. And it was just so fascinating to watch just how people reacted to it, how mm-hmm. they approached it. You know, there was some skepticism initially with some of the people in the room, but then, you know, they just enjoyed it and enjoyed it for what it was and treated it almost like a sparkling wine or a champagne.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Okay, so Bill sounds like a really interesting character, because I guess in like the corporate world of beer, it definitely becomes about market share. And, you know, Lion have gone on to take over quite a few breweries in the UK as well as Australia. Yeah. And yeah, it feels like more about market share than it does necessarily about passion. And I'm just speaking from perspective, because I don't know anyone in those industries. So yep. I don't know. But like it sounds very fascinating that at the heart of this huge corporate, like you said, duopoly, one of the biggest market shares in Australia, was a guy who really, really cared about the product and the presentation and wanted to share that. And, you know, yeah. your career was launched probably because of his passion.
100% it was. You know, his passion rubbed off on me. I mean, mm-hmm. he was very involved in the IBD as well. So, you know, he's got a bit of an international reputation. He's a bit of a legend, old Bill. And I remember when I had my light bulb moment and I started researching, you know, how do I do this? How do I become a brewer? I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I sent him an email and said, I want to be a brewer. Can you help me? And he said, right, we're going for lunch. As he did back then. And he said, so how's your chemistry? And I went, oh, I haven't done chemistry since high school. He said, you don't want to be a brewer. It's not what you want to do. And he actually already knew the path I should go down. So he put me through all the sensory training at Lion, which was amazing. You know, he sent me down to the hop fields to learn about hops. You know, little did I know I'd be working in hops 15, 20 years later. But it was all for me. For him, it was around the appreciation and understanding of beer as opposed to actually the technical, actually brewing a beer. Mm-hmm. So he also, I think, could see the value in having a female talking about beer, because at the time it was brewers who were predominantly men. I mean, there were a tiny handful of us over here of females. We started a group called Women in Beer, which then evolved into Pink Boots, and I'm sure you're familiar with Pink yeah. Boots from a global point of view. But I think there were six or seven of us. And that was it.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Everyone, but Bill actually saw the value in having someone who was not your stereotypical beer drinker mm-hmm. out there talking about beer and shifting those perceptions around what beer is and can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what a guy. Sounds amazing. Sounds right. Yeah. So, okay. So to dive back into kind of your story with it. So you go from Lion and you kind of just touched upon there, but you saw you basically wanted to kind of give people a moment that you had with Beer It by the sounds of it. So what was your kind of drive and aim, and what was the business that you actually formed coming out of that?
Yeah. So my role when I was at Lion, I was in the planning and insights team. So I was looking at beer as a category. So I was looking at how do we grow beer? And some of the growth drivers that we identified were obviously females, the food occasion, which wine dominated, and this whole piece around appreciation as well. So I knew that, you know, there was opportunity in that space. I didn't realize I was going to leave and start my own business. So for the couple of years that I had my epiphany and I was still at Lion, I kept trying to kind of orchestrate all of our big strategy planning sessions to create this person that was the Jamie Oliver of beer. You know, I kept talking about, because Jamie Oliver just did for food. I mean, he lifted food, you know, but he made it accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
But he also had people really thinking about what they were eating, what they were cooking, the flavors. I just think he's done an amazing job. And he was very relevant at the time. So I kept dropping this reference in. It's like, you know, how do we create this Jamie Oliver of beer that someone that's different? No one quite got it. and I remember sitting down, I think it was with HR, and they were asking me, you know, what I wanted to do. And I said, this is what I want to do. And they're like, we just don't have that role. It just doesn't, you know, it's not a role that we have in the business. And so at the time, I actually had two children very close together. So left a little bit, came back, left again. and that was, I guess, the trigger for me was coming back after my second son, and just thinking, yeah, now's the time. If Lion's not, you know, if they can't create this role for me, then it's actually a good opportunity for me to create it myself. So the business initially was really a platform around education. So it was all of those things, as you said, surprising people with those experiences around beer that I felt probably, you know, not that many people had appreciated or had the opportunity to be guided through it. And as I said, at the time, you know, we were still very dominated by mainstream lager, but we were starting to get some craft brands creeping in as well. So there were probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 breweries then, and some little craft breweries doing some fun stuff. So there was enough to play with, and those breweries and use their beers and showcase different styles and flavors and food pairings. And so that's really how it started. Was I started running public events and realized that it's really hard to run a public event. And then it was around the time the GFC hit. So again, I mean, it was all just fluke really, but a lot of the corporates were pulling back on their entertaining or their, you know, their big, so they used to do a lot of very high-end wine events and they just felt it was a bit too ostentatious. Whereas craft beer, because it's so much more of the social equalizer, they actually saw an opportunity to still entertain their clients, but do it at a more, I guess, accessible and low-key is how they saw it, way. So my business just took off on the back of that.
Wow.
it was great. And, you know, people were really surprised. I remember someone saying to me, this guy came up to me, he was almost in tears, and he said, I can't believe, you know, that I've had my blinkers on for 40 years and all I've ever thought about with food was wine, and you've just blown my mind, and, you know, I've missed 40 years of this.
Wow, that is so cool.
You've got many more years to enjoy it. But, yeah, there were so many reactions like that where people just were completely excited and blown away by what beer could do when it came to pairing with food. So yeah, it was great.
Well, it's interesting because I guess just getting boots on the ground is such a fascinating way to do it. And just, I think when you can have a direct conversation with people or like bring them into that world, you can just see the lights change in their eyes, you know, I guess. And it's something that we always say here that, you know, you have simple ingredients, but infinite possibilities with beer. And it's still very, maybe because it's such a commodity and everyone just thinks of having a pint at the end of the night, or like it still feels like there's a lot of work to do in this area. So I wonder where you got to with it and what made you kind of step away from it.
Yeah. So I agree. There's still so much opportunity. There's a huge amount of opportunity. And, you know, we've had a weird few years, obviously. And with that, I think people, particularly probably post-COVID, I think craft actually did quite well in COVID, but with the economic concerns that a lot of people have, you know, they're pulling back and actually going back to that mainstream option, which, you know, as long as they're drinking beer, I think there's always an opportunity to get them moving into, you know, the other places. So 2008 I launched my business Beer Diva, and I remember going through all the naming. It's like, it has to have beer in it, has to have a female kind of word associated with, and I just wrote this list. And I remember getting to Diva and went, yeah, that's it. And that's now, everyone knows me as Beer Diva. Like people, it's a brand that's 10 times bigger than me. They don't, you know, a lot of people go, oh, you're that beer girl, you're that Beer Diva, you're that, you know, none of them know my name is actually Kiralee. So where have I got to? I ran a lot of events. I edited Beer and Brewer magazine over here. I consulted. Lion were one of my biggest clients, funnily enough. So I did a whole lot of consulting work back to Lion. Wow. Some advisory boards. I did a lot of training. So I did a huge amount of bar staff training. I ran a whole program for Lion under that as well, because they knew that if you got bar staff on board, and you know, they're a great influence.
They're your sales team, aren't they? Effectively, like if you can bring them into it, they're the people who are going to be serving it. You know, we have the same conversations with our tap room staff now. It's like, you are, you know, all of the work that goes behind this, you are like the most important kind of cog in the wheel now, because you're going to tell people what it is and why. Yeah.
And they have that opportunity to have that direct conversation as well. That was all going swimmingly. Any beer festival, I've hosted the beer awards over here for probably, I don't know, 12 years or something, which has been great. And then obviously COVID hit.
Yeah.
Being an events-based business predominantly, it all just flopped very quickly. But that's okay. I mean, I did my pivot, which is what everyone else did. And funnily enough, I ended up working on a phone line for the federal government that was supporting small businesses through COVID. Wow. So they actually recruited purposely 10 small business owners who would be going through all the COVID support systems in the same way that, you know, the people calling this phone line would be. And it was, it was full on. It was amazing to be able to say to people there is support out there. Mm-hmm. I did feel like a counsellor for a lot of the time. You know, people would just...
I can imagine, man.
...failed and hated taking money from the government when their businesses had been thriving. And it's like, you know, the government needs you to survive, so take the money and come out of it and keep your business going. But anyway, funnily enough, in the last probably 6 months of, you know, us still being in pretty heavy lockdowns over here, particularly Melbourne, all my corporate clients started coming to me asking me to do virtual events. So
Zoom beer tastings.
My house turned into a production facility. So I was making these boxes. They had beer in them. We were doing little gins and whiskey. So we were doing Boilermakers. We were doing beer cocktails. We were doing cheese. We were doing chocolates. We had glassware in there. There were probably 15 plus elements in these each box that I had individually and wrap and then ship out, you know, around the country and hope that it all survived. And the post system was horrendous. But I remember I had all this cheese. So I had an event for 170 people and we had four different cheeses. So I had cheese for 170 people that was going to be turning up at my house. I was like, I don't have the fridge space for the amount of cheese that's going to be turning up. And someone said to me, why don't you ask the cafe down the road if you can use their cool room? So I literally walked down the road and I said to this guy, the owner of this cafe, I said, look, I'm running these events. Just use it whenever you like. Just come in to the cafe whenever you like. The cool room's yours. Use it. And that was incredible. I mean, these little moments that COVID brought out, and you know, these beautiful trusting moments of people just helping each other. Anyway, so I was still doing those events, and then I guess what happened over that time, probably the biggest shift was I was the only one doing it initially. Mm-hmm. Breweries then started actually employing people to do what I did. So, they started, the staff were more educated. There were people who could go and run events in their brewery. They could even run corporate events if they wanted to. There was just a lot more options for anyone wanting to run events outside of me.
Yeah.
You know, I had a monopoly there from. It was great. and I knew I could see this shift happening, and which was great. I mean, it was a positive shift in my eyes because, you know, the more people that were educated around beer, the better. I guess I had to start thinking about, well, where do I take my business? Mm-hmm. And I did start doing a bit more consulting. So I actually went back to my Lion days and, working in a big corporate, I understood lots of structured processes for creating sales and marketing plans. I used to do all of our channel segmentation, all of our shopper research, all of our, portfolio planning. So I actually knew that I could take that to some of these smaller, medium-sized breweries that didn't necessarily have that skill set.
You are listening to Track Brewing Co. Presents a Thirst Time, and this is our interview with Kira Lee Waldo. I was just about to say, you know, we have probably a lot of smaller breweries who listen to this podcast, and us being, you know, a relatively small brewery who've gone a long way, and a lot of the UK breweries, the people that, me and Adam from Verdant had this conversation the other day where you're just basically like putting the planks down as you go, just like kind of making it up as you go, because you've never, you know, none of us came from a corporate world. So you've not got any of that kind of framework of which to build a business from. You've got product, you've got ideas, you've got passion.
Yeah.
You know, we had Adam, who's our like head of sales here now, and he's great, he's really organized, but he worked for like Cafe Nero and was their head of coffee purchasing and stuff. You know, worked in a really corporate infrastructure for a while, and you know, it was really fascinating someone coming into the business with that background, because none of us had it. And actually there's, you know, as the smaller guy, you're always kind of looking at the big corporate guy and see them slightly as the enemy or whatever. But there's loads of stuff that you can glean from those businesses, because fundamentally we are businesses. So I wonder if, you know, from your time, if you would like to bestow some wisdom upon smaller breweries and independent breweries, you know, what would be the things that you would be encouraging them to do?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me is understand who their customer is. So that channel segmentation piece for me is really, really fundamental, because not, you know, your customer base is so diverse. You know, you've got your local pub on the corner up to your premium restaurant, and their offering is so different. Mm-hmm. Yet what I found was the sales team were going in going, here's our portfolio of beer. We've got everything. Which ones are you going to take? They're going, oh, I don't know what's going to work in our venue. But actually understanding, you know, what are the key drivers, who are the consumers in those different channels, mm-hmm. you can then go in with a tailored portfolio that might be four or five really, you know, kind of spot on beers for that business. And then the whole sell, I guess, is so much more compelling when you can actually say, I've chosen these four beers because I know your consumers, you know, like to eat this food, and these beers will work really well. And, you know, whether it's a can format, whether it's a tap format, if it's a bottle, I don't know if you have bottles still over there. There's very few bottles over here. But, you know, I know premium restaurants, they hate cans on the table.
Yeah.
They can't. Yeah. So if you've got, you know, premium customers, understanding that and going, well, do I get rid of my bottling line or how do I get around this? I think understanding your customers and really talking to your customers as well and saying, what do you need? What are you looking for? Because the biggest frustration I find going into particularly restaurants, I mean, taps, there's a whole battle over taps. And again, it's having a compelling positioning, a unique positioning. And you have to, I think that's the other thing I would say is as a beer brand, really know what your brand stands for, who is your brand? Who are you talking to? Who are you trying to target? I think there's a lot of breweries that haven't really thought about that enough. And therefore it's feeling a little homogenous. I feel like everyone's just trying to do the same thing. So mm-hmm. if you really know your brand and know how you're going to, you know, the language, the tone you're going to speak, but who you're actually talking to as well, that's going to help you target, you know, who your customers are, who are they, you know, are their customers the same as your customers? So there's that piece. And then, where was I before? I kind of remember where I was going, around the channel side of things. I just think, if you can give your customers that compelling reason why they should have your beer in their venue rather than someone else's beer, or why they should have beer for a mm-hmm. start, and understanding that whole, margin opportunity, the profitability opportunity, knowing your numbers, I think is really important as well. So we used to use this amazing formula at Lion called Gemroy, and I talk about it all the time, which is gross margin return on inventory invested. So what it basically does is say you've invested $1,000 in beer. Mm-hmm. You might only be making 6% margin as a blended margin on that beer, or 10% margin, but you're selling it. So it takes stock turns into account. So beer is a high stock turn product. Mm-hmm. You look at $1,000 of wine in a store, it probably sits there for way longer. And whilst you might be getting 40% margin on it, you may sell it, you know, a tenth of the amount of the stock turns. So it's, again, understanding just the dynamics of how the different categories operate in your retailer's business, and obviously your on-premise as well. I mean, there's money to be made off tap beer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Kiralee, that was amazing. Like, I think there's so much there. Very simple, really, to think about, but super effective as well. You know, the beauty of our industry is that it's very cooperative. And I think we generally care about each other in the UK as other breweries, because you kind of all fight in a similar fight. But, you know, again, it is business at the end of the day as well. So you've got to find, it's not good enough to just expect. You have to put work in as well.
Yeah, you do. You do. And I think just the last thing I would say, and this is something that we spend a lot of time at Lion on, and the big breweries do it really well, is really understand the occasion. So show your consumers, so the end consumers, how to drink your product, like where to drink it, how to drink it, how to enjoy it, what to drink it with. Where does it fit? You know, put it on in a fine dining setting. Show them that it can work that way. I mean, I always talk about Instagram, and my feed is full of beer, obviously. Mm-hmm. The algorithm works amazingly well. But I just have this scroll of canned shots with a glass. I'm like, if I wasn't a beer drinker, that's not appealing. What's exciting about that? And the, you know, the blurb is, oh, here's our latest beer and it's great. It's got this hops and this malt and, you know, it's this style. It's like, yeah, okay. How do I have fun with it? Show me someone enjoying it in a situation that might resonate with me. And I go, actually, do you know, the next time I go out for a picnic, I'm going to take, you know, a few cans of beer and have some cheese, and because someone's actually shown me that, rather than just relying on the can and the glass shot.
Yeah, you've got my head spinning around now, currently. I'm just like all different ideas and ways to do it. Because I guess the thing for me, because I do all of our kind of like photography and stuff like that, which I love and has been a great gift for me. You know, I learned it through doing it for work. So it's been a real gift in that sense to learn how to take a photograph. You know, we release a lot of beers per week. So you're kind of just like, right, okay.
Gotta
like
get
the, the beer in the glass, you know, and it looks, you know, it is a thing. You know, if you've got like a beautiful hazy IPA, it looks amazing in the glass with the lighting right and stuff. But it is interesting what you're talking about there with adding a human aspect really changes the way that people digest things.
So does. And look, those shots are great for those who are already converted. That they're your beer nerd shots, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
As well, we do in a kind, you know, loving, embracing way. But it's not going to open up the category to people that aren't part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's that human element. Yeah, just showing it. As I said, showing people having fun and showing it in different scenarios that get people thinking about it.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to go have to go to the drawing board and plans of things. No, thanks for bestowing that wisdom. That was really fascinating. I've never really had anyone on the podcast, I'm trying to think now, that's kind of come from that side of things, you know, from like the more corporate side of things and then into the independent side of things. So it understands those two worlds. That was really, really fascinating. Okay. So you did be a diva because we actually, for anyone that doesn't know, the original idea was for me to just speak to you briefly because we're just about to run a really exciting project, which is we're using these brand new New Zealand varietals, experimental varietals, as part of the Bracht Brewing project. I think we're one of the first in Europe to be able to use them. So when people are listening to this, hopefully I'll get it out, a very quick turnaround, and get it out next week, which is when our first beer will be released with it. So how do we get from the beer diva into NZ Hops, experimental varietals, and where you're sitting right now with the NZ Hops LTD t-shirt on?
I know, look how well branded I am. So I was actually asked through a previous connection from Lion, who ended up at NZ Hots. I was approached to do a market review of the Australian beer market, and particularly from a hops point of view. I mean, so I'm now, this is my 24th year of working in beer in
Wow.
Australia. So I know, yeah, I know. I know most of the breweries, and I
Yeah.
know most. I could pick up the phone and, have a chat to them. So I did that project, and NZ Hops, they grow. I mean, so they're basically a co-op. They've got 27 growers, some, fourth, fifth generation growers. They
Shout
talk
out
about passion and
to Brent at Mac Ops there, because yeah, we've had him on
oh, I
before.
was gonna say, yeah, love Brent. He's amazing. But yeah, look, there's so much expertise, and therefore their product is fantastic. So I was actually asked to help NZ Hops build their Australian business for them. So we've got an amazing distributor in Australia, Bintani, and I know them very well. So my role is more of a, I guess, a brand ambassador role, to help just promote the brand amongst the breweries, and just, I guess, look for opportunities where, like Bract and other collab programs, where breweries can just have a play and have it, use existing hops, but also the Bract hops as well. So I do that 3 days a week. So I still have a Beer Diva hat, and I actually have launched another business called Beer Matters, which is a research data insights business for the independent beer industry, which
Wow.
is basically all about taking all of that stuff from Lion days and going, the independents need this information. How do we put it in a really digestible format so that the independents start at the same, level playing field? That only launched a couple of months ago, so that's new. But with NZ Hops, they have an incredible and a long-standing relationship with Plant and Food Research, and that's where all these experimental hops come from. So they work with Plant Food Research, and they've just got this ongoing, it's a labor of love, thousands and thousands and thousands of different crossings and, little tiny, I don't know, what are they called, little shoots. Yeah, that's where the Bract program comes from. So when it gets to the point where we actually take it to the breweries, so we've got about 70 breweries globally, and it's so great to have the UK and Europe on board this year. So it only launched last year officially,
Amazing.
and we've got US breweries, New Zealand, and Australian breweries as well. So I manage it at a global level. And it's basically taking those hops that have done all the agronomic testing, so they're good yield hops, they've been tested, and some of these have been in the pipeline for 10, 15 years. I mean, hops take a very long time. You've got to be very patient in the hop world, but they've got to the point where everyone thinks they're good enough to potentially be launched commercially. And the most important step, and it's a bit like your bar staff in terms of, getting that influence, is getting the brewers' feedback. So that's where your brewers come in to play, and we say, here are some varieties. Go and play, go and, knock yourself out and tell us what you think about them. And then we collate all of that feedback and say, which of these hops we think is a rising star, and it has to be a superstar. So you're probably familiar with Superdelic, which we launched here. So that was in our Bract program last year, is
Amazing.
NZH102, and it's an incredible hop. But we know that whichever hop we launch, it's got to be out of this world. So there's so many hop varieties out there now. It's got to be a real standout hop. And it's so exciting to, have amazing breweries on board and providing that feedback and using our hops. So yeah, that's Bract in a kind of in a nutshell.
It's yeah, and from the other side, it's really exciting, you know, when you get a new product in the brewery. So I tasted that beer out of tank, and it's just amazing, you know. You're trying this thing for the first time that you've it's like a single hop. So we've got NZ101, I think it is.
Yep.
Which, yep, I believe is a derivative of Cascade, like New Zealand Cascade, and
yes, yeah, and European as well. So it's So it's quite tropical.
Really tropical.
Yeah, some good tropical notes from it. Yeah. So that was in our program last year as well. But because the program was so new, we wanted to put it in this year as well. But we're getting really good feedback on 101.
Love it. Well, I find it really interesting. I sent it to Brent. And, you know, I'm more on your side of things. You know, I never got into the brewing, but as a, you know, as a beverage and everything that goes into it, and being able to sample it from start to finish and just seeing these raw products become this beautiful finished beer, it's where I kind of lost myself. I actually found, and maybe it's just brewing practices, but NZ hops, you always used to have quite like a, maybe like an aggressiveness about them. You know, very, very pronounced. You know, if you were drinking an NZ hopped beer and it had almost like this long hop profile. Now, like with newer varietals, I get a real, big tropical kind of almost like sweet candied thing going on.
I was going to say there's a lot of candy coming through and super delicate. It's all candy, it's berry, it's marshmallow, it's real lolly sherbety character, which is so unique.
And I guess is that just based around brewers' feedback to hop growers to encourage those kind of crops to come forward?
Yeah, I think, you know when you've got a good hop, and the feedback for us, I mean, particularly with Superdelic, if we look at Superdelic last year, you know, when you're getting proactive feedback from brewers saying, this is the best freaking hop I've ever used, you know, this is amazing. And I think what was so exciting about it was that it was so unique, and it wasn't. Yeah. So NZ hops, because I've been judging for years as well, and we could always tell a beer with NZ hops, and it was that almost diesel-y character, which is what was very classic.
Yeah.
Bit dank, and you know, there was a lot of that garlic onion characteristic, which now has actually kind of moved into the American hops. I get a lot of, you know, that onion garlic, which is it's absolutely acceptable when you look at the style guidelines now for American palau. Onion and garlic is absolutely in there, but I felt like it's almost swapped over a little bit. Something's happened. I mean, the Americans are they've always been those big punchy hops. But I think the brewers are just looking for something that just showcases a unique characteristic.
Yeah.
And particularly when it works well as a single hop, which most of these hops, the feedback is they all do work really nicely as a single hop, but they can also play really nicely with other hops as well. So, you know, it's that kind of dual opportunity where, you know, they can enhance or be enhanced by other hops, but they also stand on their own
When you think, it's so funny, I'm going to make an analogy here, which is probably going to get lost on most people, but like, I love basketball. So the NBA has been dominated by American players for so long. You know, America's pedigree is so high, but in the last kind of like 5 or 6 years, actually European players are really making a huge impact over there. And, you know, the last five MVPs have all been European players. And it kind of feels in the hop world, you know, when I'm thinking now of like boots on the ground, what hops are brewers talking about and what hops are consumers talking about, it feels like New Zealand's kind of stealing the show, because it's like Nectaron, Peacherine, you know, obviously Nelson's always been there, Superdelic's coming through. It feels like there's a real energy about the NZ Hop Market that seems to be, yeah, taking a lot of I guess driving a lot of the excitement within the craft beer world.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I'm not going to say that just because I, you know, work for NZ. You know, I get a good view across the board. But I think you're right. I think, it just feels like there's some really great momentum behind NZ hops at the moment. And maybe it's just that, you know, the particular characteristics are resonating now with the current beer consumer.
Yeah.
You know, we had the big pine, resinous, citrus, kind of those big marmalade characteristics of the US hops that everyone loved. But, you know, we all kind of shift and change. And, it just feels like they've hit a sweet spot with where the beer styles are now and where consumers' taste profiles are as well. It's not, you know, that big kind of assertive bitterness that people used to chew through and love. It was almost a challenge, wasn't it, to have a big American double IPA and it's like, yeah, I can do this. But it's right back, hasn't it? Yep. You know, that's the thing. And I think, you know, it's the hops are amazing and they are unique, but also I think just where the market and the taste flavor profiles of consumers, it's just hit that sweet spot too, which is great.
As someone who comes from like a kind of sommelier and judging background and understanding like flavor and people's perceptions, you know, when we were talking about how people drink beer in a glass, how much do you think naming plays a part in this as well? Because when you think like Nectaron, Peacherine, Superdelic, there's a real immediacy to them that I feel, you know, consumers can latch onto and kind of maybe understand it. It's kind of telling them something, it's communicating something before that they've even had it.
They're almost onomatopoeic, aren't they? Yeah. They almost sound like that.
Yeah.
It's like that. Yeah, look, I think definitely the naming, absolutely. I mean, Superdelic particularly is one of those hops that has just resonated and people love the name. Like they really do love the name. I feel like, again, and I'm going to come back to that pointy end of the market, I think the brewers really love those names.
Yeah.
I reckon the consumers, unless they're that really pointy end of the market, wouldn't know what the name of the hop was. And I don't expect them to. You want your brand and your beer to resonate.
But if you put it on the front.
In the name.
Yeah, in the name. So absolutely. Like, you know, because we always put like the hops underneath. So it's just like Daydream or something. And then I mean, that's another half one. But, you know, you put the name and then the hops that are in it. So it feels like people almost understand it more than, I don't know. I, this is just totally off the top of my head as we were talking. I just wondered if you felt it played any part in how it's been.
Absolutely does. And I think particularly, as you say, when people use the name, you know, we've seen beers, Nectaron of the Gods, and, you know, there's, I think, from three different regions, there's been a super Superdelic beer. So the US, the New Zealand and Australia have all launched a beer with that name. And I think that's really fun. And that does start, you know, and I think it's a great way to educate the consumers about, you know, the hops in the beer. And I think anything that we can do to just demonstrate the kind of agricultural component, I just think it's that commodity perception, isn't it, still? You know, it's all full of chemicals. There's so many misconceptions out there. But no, you're right. I think it definitely helps. And I don't know if we're at that point yet where people will be choosing a beer unless, as I said, they're at that pointy end and they go, I've had Nectaron and I want to find beers with Nectaron in them. Yeah. But it would be amazing to the point.
I totally agree. It's just it's always fascinating. These little variables are always so interesting in like understanding why and what resonates with people. Kiralee, I'm sorry. I know we were just planning a little talk here, and I could talk to you for so much longer. You've probably got things to do. So I'll kind of bring it to a close. So I like to ask, you know, how you see the next kind of 5 years progressing in the beer industry from brewers to hop growers' perspective. I know that this can be a really kind of long answer, but I guess if we can compress it into a couple of paragraphs or something that you feel that would be poignant.
You know, as I said, I think it's challenging, but where there's challenge, there's opportunity. And I think the biggest opportunity we have as an industry is to start shifting how we talk about beer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bring those occasions, broaden the appeal, broaden the reach. To me, that's the biggest opportunity that we have in beer. And just, yeah, that the education piece, without it being a lecture, we're never going to want to lecture people, but, you know, just bringing them on the journey is, you know, to me, the biggest opportunity that we do have in beer. I feel really positive about it. I think when you look at where, I guess, people are just heading, the health and well-being piece, you know, beer as an alcohol is probably one of the healthiest alcohols to consume. We have great no low alcohol options compared to other categories. So I think sometimes beer is a little bit reserved in celebrating itself and all the good things about it. And I think there's partly that, certainly in Australia, with the structure of the industry, with the duopoly and, you know, going out on a limb and talking about those kind of well-being pieces. But there's so many great things to talk about. And I think sometimes we can be a little modest and understated, and we probably just need to shout with a bit more excitement in the future and just bring people along and get those young bloody Gen Zs off the RTD and get them into here.
Amazing. Well, you've been fighting the good fight for 24 years now, Kiralee. So you're making change out there. Okay, so the last question I like to ask people is, it's gloomy of a kind, but, you know, we're going to go there anyway. So you're in a bar. They can, they've got every beer that's ever been made. They can produce any beer that's never been made if you want something totally new. And you sat there at the bar and there's a TV in the corner and it just flickers on and there's just a news flash and it just says, a meteor is about to hit Earth in an hour. And the barman slaps his hand on the bar and says, what are you drinking? So what beer would it be for you?
Okay, it would be a 750 ml bottle of Saison DuPont. So nice. Saison is my favorite beer style by a long way, and I think more breweries should be doing it and more people should be enjoying it. It's the best beer for all occasions. It's the best table beer. And Saison DuPont is obviously the kind of pinnacle of that. So, yeah, I'd sit there and neck it. Before the media hit.
And have a smile on your face as you do it. And that's it. Another episode done. A massive thanks to Kiralee for having the time and being so gracious to do that with me. I hope you enjoyed that one. Loads in there to take away. And also the beer that we produced, Fields of Gold, is now out. So if you are listening to this on release day, the Wednesday, it is out today. It's absolutely delicious, if I do say so myself. You can make up your own minds. But yeah, it's available from our website now. So if you want to head over to trackbrewing.co, you'll be able to pick up a 4-pack on there or pop into the tap room and try it. And make sure you let us know what you think. Thanks again. We'll be back soon with another episode. But for now,